fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Experian. Are you paying for subscriptions you don't use, but can't find the time or energy to cancel them? Experian could cancel unwanted subscriptions for you, saving you an average of $270 per year and plenty of time. Download the Experian app. Results will vary. Not all subscriptions are eligible. Savings are not guaranteed. Paid membership with connected payment account required.
Good morning and welcome to episode 110 of the Jaguars on SI podcast. Hoo-wee. My name is Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. Today we've got two segments to go over before training camp begins next week. The biggest training camp battles, positional battles that we're looking forward to seeing, and then just kind of the biggest questions in general that we have for the team that we'll be monitoring the whole season, I guess, but starting in training camp. But before we get to that, John, how are you doing and how are you feeling about NCAA 25?
I'm psyched about it. I have to make sure I'm still remaining productive, but I'm loving it. But I've already ran into some hilariously like stupid things happen to me, stupid events. Deion Sanders' kid put me in a pack in like my first like ranked game.
Oh, yeah.
I lost one ranked game on the road in like triple overtime by throwing a pick six on a 2-point conversion. That was pretty good.
No, not the 2-point conversion pick six.
Yeah, that was pretty good. And my office is now under construction as becomes a part of the wife's job, our office. So I'm now currently here with this Victorian-esque, Kafka-esque painting.
Beautiful backdrop you got, John.
Yeah, for further notice. So, bite me. Hey, man, it's our last week, dude. Our last week of the dead zone. And I know we complain about it every episode, but
yeah,
when like your livelihood is based on getting people like to read things, it's this year, time of the year sucks. So I'm almost looking forward to being this time next week. Me and you will be at Miller Electric Center toasting Diet Cokes and some form of chicken and vegetables.
That's right. Well, are you going to be visiting the pro shop? I mean, I probably won't buy any merch, but I'm going to check out the throwback here in person. It's going to drop a day after this episode airs.
No.
You don't care?
No, I'm a reporter.
Sure. All right, well, 9:04, yeah. I think that's the time to look for, right?
Yeah, probably. other than it seems like it's coming out tomorrow. I'm assuming at 9:04 a.m. That's about all I have.
All right. Yeah, there. You're too cool to care. I get it. Let's
justifiably. Okay. All right.
I think the throwbacks are pretty sweet, even if I try my best to be an objective reporter.
I think they're sweet.
I assume they will be sweet.
Yeah. No. I think they're going to be sweet. Just morally, at my core, would never done something.
Okay. Speaking of the Miller Electric Center, kind of, what's your first camp battle that you're going to be monitoring when it starts on Wednesday? Is that right? I know it's the 24th. I don't even know what day that is.
Speaking of Miller Electric Center, kind of.
No.
Training camp starts next Wednesday. I think at like 8:45 a.m. or something like that. So bright and early. I will say the first couple of days of training camp sucks. And like until they get in the pads. Am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong.
It's just a funny way to start the segment, but you're not wrong.
Until they get in the pads, it's like OTAs on like a little like remember those little stepping stools people have for kids? Mm-hmm. That's what the first couple of days of training camp are like.
Adult staircase, but just those little baby stepping stones. Now you're right. It's basically just everyone is losing a pound or five of sweat being out there, even if it is a pretty early wake-up call or just an early start.
I struggled with those stairs.
Okay. You just bringing up like all your like traumatic childhood.
You unlocked a core memory. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah,
the riding a bike one was an all-timer. That one's gonna be
All right, somebody commented it was like it's because Shipley crushed it or something like that. I'm like, all right, this one don't share things about me in my life. This is like unnecessary.
Yeah, this podcast is supposed to be a safe space, though. Twitter,
no, it's not. No, it's not. You can come at me for so many other things. I was told in middle school I looked like a dog, like a pit bull,
puppy. You've seen that one before, actually.
Yeah. What? Maybe not a pit bull. Maybe it was a dog with the wrinkles. I don't know. Some form of dog. I've said that before. That's sad. All right. Speaking of training camp battles, other than the battle I have within myself daily, Gus. First one. I think maybe this is a bit out there, and maybe it's a bit like of a copium to like past stances. I consider Cam Robinson and Walker Little a camp battle. Is that wrong of me?
No, I don't think so. I feel like we talked about it on the last podcast when we were going over your top 25 Jaguars countdown, just with the quotes from Phil Rauscher. But then even before that, from like Doug Peterson and other people throughout the offseason, has kind of suggested that it's not necessarily 100% Cam Robinson's job set in stone to start at left tackle. So I think it's definitely his job to lose, but it's also certainly a battle worth watching and probably the battle worth watching.
My expectation would be that Cam Robinson wins said battle. I mean, he's won every other battle. It's Walker Little.
7 years, yeah.
In his career. It's like Rocky and Apollo Creed fighting for the third time. I don't know if they fought three times, but it's like that. I don't know who the Russian is in this scenario. Maybe Anton playing left tackle next year just kills Apollo Creed. God, I got sad real quick.
Oh, okay.
It's simply the presence of Anton on the roster kind of like an omen that, like, while this is an important battle, are either one of these guys going to be back next year, or is Anton just going to be a left tackle, you think? Like, to me, it's an important battle because obviously you need to know who your left tackle is, but is there any chance either one of these guys is starting at left tackle next year too?
I was kind of always the assumption that they were going to take, like, whatever the best bargain was between the two. Like, even if they liked one of the players a lot more than the other going into 2025 free agency, I assume they would have at least tried to retain one, even if that means spending a decent amount of cash in free agency again, even though Shad Khan was just talking about how we got to stop the addiction to free agency. But I mean, now that you're saying it, especially it feels like if Tyson gets extended before the off season, and especially before training camp, because that's usually like the soft deadline, I feel like, for off season extensions. So if Tyson gets extended in the next week, then I would agree with you. Where I think there's honestly a good chance where they both walk and then they end up doing their bit where they draft like the biggest hole in the first round as the replacement. But until Tyson signs, like, I don't know, they do still like value having three viable or playable offensive tackles on the roster. So I don't know. I don't think they'd be as willing to let one walk.
I don't know. It's kind of been by happenstance, I think, because they walked, like, this staff walked into having those three tackles, and it almost seemed like by accident because Balky didn't draft Juwan, and Little now, with years of hindsight, seems more like maybe it was an Urban pick because Urban remembered him from Rivals.com or anything else.
Yeah.
So
he was a big time recruit for sure.
Really, the only one of these guys Balky has invested in has been Cam with the contracts and then Anton with the picks. So I think like they've liked having those guys, but I'm not sure it's like a core philosophy where they're like, oh, we're always going to have three starting caliber offensive tackles. I'm not sure either Cam or Walker on the roster next year. I would assume you don't see both again. As for the job this year, I think Cam is the favorite, but as we talked about, I do think it's like a legitimate battle. I think especially after last year, how the offensive line looked, they want to get their best five out there. But the thing working against Walker Little is, and the thing that's always been the case with Cam Robinson is he's a left tackle only. You know, like that's the thing with both of those guys. You're either starting at left tackle or you're not a starter. You know, like we learned last year, Walker Little's not a guard. He's naturally better at left tackle than he is, you know, at right tackle. Whereas some other guys, if they're not starting, like they still, you know, have a chance to, you know, potentially play elsewhere. So I'm interested to see what happens. I think they'd be okay entering the season. It would kind of, again, be a pretty disappointing note to, you know, a second round pick going into his fourth year as a backup for the fourth year in a row. But that's at least my guess of what happens. But I do think it'll be a legitimate battle, which I don't know, maybe it hasn't been in the past. Like maybe, you know, Walker was getting a ton of reps last year because he had to be ready for the first month of the season. It never felt like a competition. You know what I mean? Yeah. It felt like they just had to get him ready.
Well, I feel like the battle is like can almost extend to the offseason just because I like you're saying, I assume Cam Robinson is going to retain the role, but they both kind of have to like prove themselves, especially in relation to last year. Like Walker Little has to prove that he can stay healthy and actually like put together a just bigger sample size, assuming he's ever actually able to get that opportunity. And then Cam Robinson also has to kind of prove that he's able to stay on the field and be as reliable as he was for the first 6 years. And so even like past training camp, I feel like they're almost going to be like trying out just to get a contract from the team next offseason or just from any team even.
So here's my thing. How much of the Cam Robinson is nasty narrative plays into him likely winning that job? Because like obviously like the run metrics and stuff don't show it. You see it on the field. Like so it's something that obviously goes beyond that. But Doug Peterson seemingly talks about it every time he talks about Cam. Is that is like the rest of the line not being like that? Because I mean, you know, Brandon Sheriff I think is like that. Anton Harrison, I don't think you'd classify as that right now. Ezra Cleveland, no. I'm still reeling, by the way. I'm still reeling.
Over the X Factor?
Yeah. Ezra the X Factor. I got a message from a faithful listener about that. It said I was dying at cuts too. They're like, in my head, I hear Ezra Cleveland. I think Jack Horse offensive lineman. Because he hears X Factor core piece of the offense. I'm still reeling from it.
Yeah, X Factor because, again, I'm just like confident in everyone else, barring health or just assuming good health. And so, like, I feel like, like, just like the overall team rises and falls with Trevor Lawrence, the offensive line, it's going to rise and fall with Cleveland, baby.
Yeah.
I've got a defensive X Factor that I'll reveal later, too. It's almost as bad.
You know the saying, in Jacksonville, go Shad Khan, Trevor Lawrence, Ezra Cleveland.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. All right. Gus, your first camp battle, where he's going to have two. All right. Which one are you most looking forward to seeing play out starting next week?
First, I was going to split up strong safety / nickel and then cornerback, but I'm just going to group them all together in defensive backs for one little spiel.
Those guys too.
No. I'll make my second one like a short one.
Okay.
Yeah, but correct me if I'm wrong or if you disagree with this. I would assume right now that the week one starters for the defensive backfield for the Jags are going to be Tyson Campbell and Ronald Darby outside, Andre Sisco at free safety, Antonio Johnson at strong safety, and Darnell Savage at nickel.
That'd be my guess, yeah.
Yeah. And so for me, the defensive X factor is Jarian Jones because
because the defensive backfield I thought you were gonna say Darnell Savage and I would have gotten a chuckle out of me. I wasn't ready for any name other than Darnell Savage. All right.
Because I feel like for Savage and Campbell and Sisco and even Johnson, like I feel like I kind of know what they are. And like obviously they could all take steps or even take steps backward. But I feel like Jarian Jones is basically, I guess wild card would be a better term.
Yeah. What is an X factor to you?
Just an important player, I guess. Or a player that'll like swing a game or a season.
Swing a season.
I think they have the potential to.
Jarian Jones and Ezra Cleveland? Okay.
Because, like, if they both take, like, really big steps, like, obviously everyone's talking about, like, younger, like, bigger hotshots, like Trayvon Walker, Evan Lloyd, Anton Harrison, even Trevor Lawrence still, Brian Thomas. But those, I feel like they're just, like, two underlying X factors, essentially.
No, they're on the radar for sure. Here's my question. Are you to believe that Jones starts at some point in the season, and where do you think he starts? Because here's my thing. I think he's the third best cornerback on the roster by like a Grand Canyon size gap. Like it obviously goes Tyson and then Darby and then Jones, I think. But where's he playing in your opinion? Like, do they play him over Darby at some point in the season? Because they seem to think he can play outside. But in my opinion, everything about his profile is he was much better in a slot in college, and that's probably what he's best at. But you also have Savage there. So I guess my question for you is, where is he playing and when is he playing?
I don't think he would start over Darby unless Darby got injured and then like was struggling as a result of injury. But Darby's another guy where, like, assuming health, which, like, really it's kind of silly to assume health for all these players as I'm listing them off, because NFL players just don't stay fully healthy. But, like, if he doesn't get dinged up too bad, like, I have confidence that Darby is going to start the full season. And so maybe there's a situation where, like, Jones mixes in, like, throughout the game and gets snaps at outside cornerback, and Darby's not 100% out there, like, for every single snap. But I definitely think that Jones, like you were saying, is, like, more suited for the nickel, whether that is nickel cornerback or, like, some snaps at strong safety or dime linebacker. Just, like, I feel like the Jags want to just, like, load up on potential playmakers in the middle of the field, which they've really, really missed for the last several years, really since, like, their, like, three-headed tandem at linebacker in 2017 and 2018. Because Foye Aluakon is definitely a great player in the middle, but he's not as dynamic in pass coverage as he is in run defense. And so, like, they've really let up, I feel like, a lot of explosives over the past 5+ years over the middle of the field. And so I feel like the Jags are giving themselves a chance to, like, hit on one or two players, but also have one or two players that, like, aren't starting right away, like Jones, but could fill in, like, at a few different spots on the defense. And so I feel like it'll be interesting to see how much of a step Jones can take from being, like, a rookie to a potential, like, not starter. I feel like the only way he starts the season, honestly, is because of an injury. I think, like, based on how well he's doing in practices, he could play up to, like, 50 or 60% of snaps maybe, and just there could be, like, a pretty heavy rotation based on, like, defensive personnel and what the offense is giving look-wise. And so, yeah, I feel like he's, like Cleveland, like, even more of an X factor because he can move around so many different spots and has more versatility.
Go to hell. You're just messing with me now.
I feel like my point is just that, like, his development and just how well Jarian Jones plays is going to have a big domino effect on the rest of the defensive backfield.
For the record, I agree with everything you said. I felt like he's an even bigger X factor than Ezra Cleveland. Was bait to get a reaction out of me.
I was just rambling.
It worked. No, it was a good ramble. It was a good ramble. You made a lot of and my point. In my mind, you made a lot of good points. So I don't necessarily honestly disagree with anything. So I think Jones can be a major piece of the secondary moving forward. I'm just interested to see what it looks like year one, especially early on. I think, like, Jones will definitely have a chance to play. Like, if anybody in the secondary gets hurt, it feels like he's going to be the first guy off the sidelines, you know, whether that's on the outside, whether that's on the inside. I think it'd be better for his rookie season if he just stayed on the inside. But if something happens, like, if, like, Darby gets hurt or if anything happens to Campbell, I feel pretty confident that Jones will be the first guy off the field. And I feel pretty confident that Jones is going to play the second most snaps of probably any rookie in this class behind Brian Thomas Jr.
Do you think if, like, say, Campbell or Darby got injured, Monterrick Brown or DeAndre Price or another player behind Jones might, like, get a few snaps in rotation, or do you think they're just going to give Jones a shot and have him out there until he fails, basically?
I think it was just Joe Jones out there, honestly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think they'll just be ready for him to hit the field in one way or another.
Yeah. So, again, I feel like I said at the top, the week one expected starters are not set in stone, but that's what we would expect. And it's not like John's first one where, like, it's just like a starting job where you're hopefully going to play 100% of snaps is up for grabs, but just mostly based on the development or just like play and training camp of Jones. It'll be interesting to see how like the snap counts and snap shares balance out for the DBs.
Yeah, no, I'm full on board with you there. All right, my next one, your favorite one, maybe the most important one, Cam Little versus Riley Patterson. This is your weight class, man. I'll be honest, give you a jersey and throw you out there, the three of you, and I want anybody to try to pick out who are the two football players and which one's the Big Cat Country authority figure.
No, that's fair. I would be – my player comps would be, like, kicker or ball boy, essentially. I think I'd rather be a ball boy, though.
It always kills me, like, during the season when I see them have, like, a 12-year-old ball boy. And I'm like, the hell are you doing out here? Go to school, dude.
I was like, who's your dad?
Yeah, right.
What's your last name?
All right.
Not actually. But it was funny because John was – we were texting before the show – trying to think of like what to do for the segments, and John's like, kicker would be a good one. You can have that. I'm like, why do I have to take
kicker? Yeah, I don't. I've really been prejudiced against you lately. Between that and the between that and the pickleball thing, I'm sorry. I've just been making a lot of. But in my defense, I was right about pickleball.
Competitive.
I was right about pickleball, so I felt like this was right too.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
My bad. All right. I think Cam Little is the obvious person that's, you know, going to win it. I never did a story on Shad Khan's quotes about Cam Little, but I mean, Shad Khan talked about how much he likes the new kicker, which
really,
I mean, yeah. So like the owner is saying that he likes, you know, the, what was it? Sixth round. Was he a sixth round kicker? Seventh round?
Six.
The owner is saying, I mean, that he has a pretty good shot. And not only that, Khan also made comments about how in the past they were worried about like the range they had to. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but it was like a damning quote about basically Riley Patterson's range in 2022. So the owner's like openly like saying he doesn't think one guy has the leg for the job. That's obvious because the coach and general manager probably have told him that's exactly what they think as well. Like you saw a giant shift in Doug Peterson's like field goal or go for it philosophy last year, because as mediocre as Brandon McManus turned out to be, you know, he had a relatively, you know, long range. So I think Little is the obvious, you know, winner here, but I don't know, like college and NFL a lot different. I'm excited to see him in an actual like NFL game setting, because who knows? I mean, maybe he gets under the lights and, you know, dribbles up something like that. So right. We've at least seen Riley Patterson make NFL kicks before.
Mm-hmm.
I think like 98% chance Little wins it, but you need to see that 2% during training camp in the preseason.
Mm-hmm. You're definitely right about how Little has the like leg strength advantage over Patterson. There was a NFL media guy, I forget who it was, who was on 1010 this week saying that Cam Little was kicking like 60 plus yarders at the NFL combine, like it was nothing. And so, and he was even doing that in games for Arkansas. So he's definitely got to do.
He made a couple of 50 plusers during OTAs.
Yeah. And then the Jags obviously value that big leg. Obviously it helps, like you were saying, like where you can kick like 40 and 50 yarders with relative confidence is huge, but also big is just having a big enough leg to kick the ball out of the end zone on kickoffs. And so, that'll be one thing that'll be interesting to hopefully see from special teams, and especially like the kicking unit is like how they strategize around the new kickoff rules. And so I'm interested to see for the kickers, like obviously not just like who can kick the farthest and with the most accuracy, but for kickoffs, like how many clubs they have in their bag, kind of, and not just can they kick it out of the end zone, but can they do squibs and. I don't know other kicking name types but other than squib, but can they like do a bunch of different kicks based on what special teams coach Heath Farwell might want?
For sure.
Whatever the new rules might call for.
No, that's a good point. It give me a percentage on confidence that Cam Little is the week one kicker. And then give me your give me a percentage and then give me a 1 to 10 your confidence in Cam Little as the 2024 kicker. Cause I mean it's an important role. I know, like, obviously kicker, you know, it's one of the lowest paid positions in football, but it's one of the most important ones too.
I would say 95% chance would have been the percentage I gave. So I'm pretty much right there with you where I think it's locked in. The shot quotes are pretty big, but I don't know. Even just like drafting a kicker, they were clearly big fans of him when you heard like Farwell talk at pressers too.
Had I not shared the shot quotes before?
Not the kicker quotes, no.
Oh, yeah. Yikes. Yeah. 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 He, for whatever reason, like it was random. It was very random. So,
but
yeah, scale one thing.
I will say 6 is probably my confidence rating, which nothing personal, Cam, but like it's just that kickers are as hard to find as quarterbacks, basically. And so hopefully it works out, but he's a rookie.
No, they aren't.
Okay, well, maybe that's wrong. I was exaggerating. The point is that they're very hard to find.
I told you to ramp up the takes. I didn't tell you to start taking
lithium. When you find a quarterback, you keep him for like hopefully 15 plus years. When you find a kicker, like even the really good ones, unless it's like a first ballot Hall of Famer like Justin Tucker, like how many kickers last on their team for 10 plus years? You always got to find new kickers, new good kickers. It's hard, man. Yeah. Tough position.
But
yeah.
We're going to go into an ad break. I'm not even going to give you the time of day to rebuttal that. No, I have several arguments to make, but I know it's every time I punch you, you're just going to get right back up. You're like one of those like
boing, boing.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to keep coming. So now
back into place.
Yeah, so we're going to break real quick and give you a second to collect yourself. Then we'll be right back. All right, guys. I'm sorry for claiming you were on lithium in the last segment.
Did you
because take a of your take?
I feel like maybe we both needed a second to collect ourselves.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I put myself in timeout. All right.
My second camp battle that I'm watching is kind of similar to the defensive backfield. I'm going with the defensive line. What?
I'm bracing.
I was like, you're already nitpicking at me.
I don't know if you're about to like say defensive line or like shot concept of security. You're on a roll today. I'm
really defensive tackle. Honestly, more than defensive line. Like, I'm not really talking about Trayvon Walker, even if he does play more snaps inside, or Josh Hines Allen, or Travis Gibson, or Miles Cole, or whoever else. Who's the edge that they like that's like a practice squad guy?
DJ Coleman.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Is there another one?
And or Yasir Abdullah?
No, it's certainly not that one. Anyway, I'm not talking about edges, but I would assume the week one starters are going to be Arik Armstead and Devon Hamilton, assuming full health. But it'll be interesting to see just like how the snap rotations play out because, again, not like kicker or left tackle where it's like you just win the job and then it's yours until like you're demoted. But it's like a kind of black and white yes and no thing. But on the defensive line, just like the defensive backfield, there's a lot more just snap distribution. And so I'm interested for really each player, like how much playing time they see. And obviously like injuries and one player being really good or bad will impact other players' playing time. But like for Arik Armstead, how much are they going to try to like scale him back during the regular season and maybe ramp him up once we get closer to December and January. And then for Devon Hamilton, all the things that we've heard this off season have been positive in terms of his health, but that definitely seems like a gotta see it to believe it type of situation. For Roy Robertson Harris, we talked about it, I think it was last week a little bit, about how he's a better pass rusher from the interior than a run defender, at least especially relative to other players on the team. And so I'm interested to see like whether he's playing a significant amount of snaps on early downs or if they almost like save him for late downs or just kind of like what their plan is to rotate him in. Cause he's certainly, he was a defensive captain last year, but he's still an important rotational piece for them. And then you've got young guys, Tyler Lacy and Mason Smith. And so I feel like Tyler Lacy has gotten some whispers of like, having a good offseason so far and getting bigger. He's certainly looked a lot bigger. I feel like he was a different player last training camp.
I've done a 180 on him. I thought maybe he won't make sense for this game, but he looks huge and has obviously gotten some compliments. So definitely think you can consider him part of the team, pending nothing bad happening during camp.
Yeah. And then Mason Smith is probably the most volatile player of anyone in the group, just because he's probably still coming back a little bit from the ACL injury that he had as a sophomore in college. And so he's like a very high risk, high reward second round rookie. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he plays 10% of snaps or like 50% of snaps. I think again, the starters are kind of set in stone, but it'll be interesting to see like if anything in training camp, especially from the younger guys, determines playing time in the regular season.
There was three guys you didn't even mention too. Probably factor in
Adam Gotsis, I mean, he's just like one of the least volatile guys. I feel like he'll play like between 1 and 8 snaps every game. Who are the two other ones?
Jordan Jefferson,
right?
And Jeremiah Ledbetter,
right?
One of Gotsis or Ledbetter probably won't be on the team, right?
I was going to say, like, I feel like Ledbetter is probably a potential cut candidate, like, before the 53 gets finalized. Because, like, Gotsis to me feels like a last guy in your room. He hasn't been in recent years, but, like, the room to get deeper this offseason. And then, like, Jordan Jefferson, I guess, I kind of forgot to mention because I feel like his role will really be largely determined by Devon Hamilton's health and effectiveness.
Yeah. No, I agree. Their pass rush formation is really just going to be Trayvon and Armstead swapping sometimes between end and defensive tackle and Robson Harris at the other tackle spot, right? Like,
pretty much.
I think Armstead's going to play a decent amount of edge this year, which I think is weird, but I feel like whenever you see like Trayvon inside, like I feel like you're really going to see Trayvon and Armstead next to each other on the interior, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Whenever you see Trayvon inside, I'm assuming Armstead's going to take a spot outside.
If it's like third and long, I could see a situation where like they have both of those guys inside just to try to create mismatches, and then like Gibson or like even like Kevin Lloyd in like a dime package coming off the edge instead. But yeah, for the most case, I think that makes sense. And it's definitely worth pointing out and worth reiterating that Eric Armstead is probably going to get a fair amount of edge snaps this year.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, we're going to move on. We're each going to have, now that we've talked about our biggest training camp battles, our biggest questions for the team entering training camp. Gus, don't look so excited. All right, my first one, we've said it, we've talked about it once, we've talked about it 800 times. Who's calling the plays? If I'm Doug, I'm not even telling the media. until post game week one, if they win, I would say it. And if not, I'd wait until Monday or wait until like Thursday or Friday. Like until everybody forgets about week one, like if it went bad. But I would just keep people like on a little string like until week one. Otherwise, I'm not sure like when we'll know who's calling plays, but it's both not that important because at the end of the day, it's still Doug Peterson's offense and he's still green lighting everything that goes on during the week and during the game. But on the other hand, it seems pretty important to the owner, which tells you it's one of the most important matters on the team this season because it could determine, you know, Doug Peterson's future. I think that's why it's important more so than maybe I think that's why it's more important, more so than it's important because Doug Peterson is quote unquote a better play caller than Press Taylor. I think that is the case. We'd largely, because we have years of evidence for Doug Peterson against 1 year of so-so production from Press Taylor. But I also think it's important because, like I've said before, if Doug Peterson enables, you know, Press Taylor to call plays again, which, again, I think he probably should be allowed to have that choice. You know, he's the head coach. Why are you hiring him if you're not hiring him to, you know, make that decision? And or why was it not said during any point of the interview onboarding process? Why was this never brought up as a possibility?
Right. Especially, like, when you've got, like, the Trevor Lawrence in tow already. And, like,
yeah.
You got to, like, make sure you're covering your bases with the offense.
Yeah, exactly. So it's clearly important to Shad Khan. I agree that Doug Peterson should be, you know, allowed to make this decision. But if he picks Press Taylor and they don't make the playoffs, which is clearly Shad Khan's expectation, that's a pretty – that could be a pretty big blow against Peterson, honestly. I could see that, like, Khan's not, like, the most impulsive owner in the NFL. He's normally, like, a year late to fire guys, other than Urban Meyer, who was so bad that Shad Khan fired him before, like, a dozen games or something. But I'd be interested to see what would happen with Doug Peterson. I do think his seat would be hot if that was the scenario. And that's why I think this is an important question, because it could determine who's even leading the team in a year from now.
Yeah, absolutely. I almost feel like a better way to phrase the question would be, instead of, like, who's calling plays in 2024, just will the play calling improve in 2024? Because as you're saying, whether it's Peterson or Taylor, who's ultimately has the headset and is talking to Trevor Lawrence, the responsibility is going to fall on Doug Peterson. And so, like, the play calling has to improve one way or another. And so, like, I feel like Peterson and Taylor probably internally felt, like, a little bit hamstrung by, like, the players last year between, like, the lack of physicality and, like, poor short yardage blocking from the offensive line, and then kind of, like, the lack of playmaking and explosiveness, especially down the field from, like, the skill position players. Like, it's certainly not, like, the play calling absolutely could have and should have been better last year, but I almost feel like they might be kind of, like, using that as an excuse. But now, like, they don't have any more excuses, because I think that they fixed what they think is the problems by adding Mitch Morse and Gabe Davis and Brian Thomas. And so, like, now the play calling just simply has to improve. And I think there's a good chance it will be, because, like, with Mitch Morse coming in, and then, like, hopefully a healthy season from whoever's starting at left tackle, and then maybe another step from Anton Harrison even, then the offensive line could actually, like, have a drop back passing game other than just, like, 3 yard or 1 yard drops for 80% of the dropbacks. Go ahead.
For the record, you named almost every offensive lineman but Ezra Cleveland.
That's
you jackass.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So I think we're step for step on that one. All right. Give me your first looming question ahead of training camp.
My looming question is the one that we had last offseason, where nothing really happened. The big addition was Calvin Ridley, but technically he was acquired at the 2022 trade deadline. And so we kept saying that we had to see big improvement from a lot of second-year players, but like, not just second-year players in the league, but, like, players who were in their second year in Jacksonville, and really just, like, players that were new to the team in general. We had to see improvement from them, since there wasn't really a ton of significant changes made to the roster. And so there have been more changes made this offseason to the roster, but I think it's still going to be important to see steps taken from, like, some of those young important pieces, like, starting with Trevor Lawrence and Trayvon Walker. Like, obviously, I think people in Jacksonville are, like, content with where they're at right now, because they expect them to continue to keep getting better and better until they're eventually stars or superstars. But, like, people nationally are a little bit underwhelmed, and I've kind of, like, not given them the time, basically. But they definitely do need to each take, like, further steps to kind of, like, live up to their number one overall pick hype. And then defensive backs Tyson Campbell and Andre Sisco have both had awesome flashes, as we talked about last week, but they really have to actually put it together for a full season, first of all. But they are still young and playing on their rookie deal, so hypothetically they could take steps forward under Chris Richard. And then Brian Thomas, like how quickly he gets acclimated and whether he's a big impact at first. If Anton Harrison can take another step. Devin Lloyd, I feel like, is probably the most like underrated one on the whole team just because he's expected to go from Will linebacker to Sam linebacker and line up on the line of scrimmage a lot more. And that doesn't mean he's going to be rushing the passer close to every snap. He'll definitely be kind of dropping off the line of scrimmage a lot too. But it'll be interesting to see how he does in that new role. And so, like, even though there were some key veteran additions this offseason between Gabe Davis, Mitch Morse, Eric Armstead, especially the latter two, like, this team really needs to grow. And, like, we were talking about Shad's comments earlier with the kicker, and that was, like, probably the biggest takeaway, or one of the biggest for sure, that I had from Shad's quotes a couple weeks ago, was the fact that he did say, like, we got to stop having this addiction to spending in free agency, and we got to develop players. And it felt like a challenge towards coaches. And so, like, it's really going to be, like, Peterson and Taylor, like, I feel like, again, have, like, fixed the problems that they think they have this offseason. And so now it's on them to, like, actually develop players and make them better rather than point the finger at them and call out, like, execution as excuses after the game. And then, obviously, Ryan Nielsen, like, there's a lot of question marks surrounding him, but whether he's actually able to develop a lot of, like, the key young players, especially since there are more, like, young guys, I feel like, on that side of the ball, is going to be a big question. It's just how much of a step can the young core take?
We have to stop being addicted to free agents. It's such a good line.
That was a bar, man. That was he's honestly a pretty solid quote machine.
No, he really is. I absolutely is. So, no, I agree with you. Like, where the Jaguars, you know, go from here, where they go in the next 5 years, it's going to depend on these core guys, the Josh Hines Islands, the Trayvons, the Trevor Lawrences, the Tyson Campbells, etc., the Devin Lloyds. So I 100% agree with you. Like, those are the guys now that they need to see, like, take these steps forward. So I'm in full lockstep with you there. I guess we're going to break real quick, and then we're going to hop into our last two questions and then boogie on out of here, my friend.
Cool beans.
All right, guess. One more question from us apiece. When I sit and think about 2024 Jaguars, I think about how wrong I was about the 2023 Jaguars offensive lines. I made fun of Mike Clay when he said their offensive lines were one of the worst in the NFL. I did it.
Mm.
I thought they were okay. I didn't think they were great. I didn't one of the worst in the NFL. I didn't think so. I'm pretty sure I tweeted a picture of them wearing the 31st offensive line and the NFL t-shirts because there were quite a few. They were that bad, you know. They were that bad last year. They were one of the worst offensive lines in football. Generally in the running game, it's so weird to look at, like, their individual and their team, like, pass pro, like, metrics because, like, Trevor Lawrence got the ball out of his hand so quickly, like, you know, you go on Sports Info Solutions and you compare Mitch Morse and Luke Fortner. Luke Fortner was like the number 9 center in the NFL in pass block, you know, blown block rate. But on the other hand, was he getting like the same pass rushes as like Mitch Morse was in Buffalo, where Josh Allen's extending the play? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's hard to see. In terms of the running game metrics, they were awful, like across the board. I think. I want to say Brandon Sheriff was good, but otherwise, no. And, like, that's the one knock I think on Anton Harrison's rookie season is he was a bad run blocker. So my question is the offensive line good enough? You know, I didn't think it was an issue going into last year. I take that back. I didn't think it was, like, the issue of the team going into last year, which it turned out that and injuries were probably the biggest things last year. I mean, the offensive line, you know, you could argue led to some injuries, you know, with Trevor Lawrence. The only change they've made is between now and last year's week one is they swapped out Ben Bartsch for Ezra Cleveland, which Ezra Cleveland's obviously a better guard than Ben Bartsch. It's not the same kind of investment, but if you're just looking at, like, the quality of player, they improved there, and they swapped out Luke Fortner for Mitch Morse. You know, otherwise, left tackle, right guard, right tackle, they're saying. You know, that's my question. I'm wondering if this offensive line, after minimal change, is good enough. And I don't have the answer. And I know they have a hope. I'm not sure if they know or if they have the answer either.
I think the run blocking especially is key because I think with Trevor Lawrence, especially with, like one of the things he's always been good at since his first career game is pocket management and getting the ball out in a timely manner. And like, I mean, sometimes he does have like head scratching interceptions when he's trying to make a hero play, but for the most part, he's an expert at just like avoiding pressure and avoiding sacks. And so I think between like, they could survive in the passing game with just like quick game and play action if they really had to. Like, I think they were eighth in success rate, passing success rate last year, maybe even higher than that, honestly, before Lawrence's injury. And so the running game, specifically short yardage, yeah, which I feel like is where like Morse will hopefully make a really big impact. But even Anton, sure, the whole line, like and a healthy Ezra Cleveland, like if they're able to improve in the short yardage run game, that'll be big time. Cause they were definitely one of the bottom three least efficient teams,
yeah,
on like third and ones and third and twos and fourth and ones last year. And so to tie back to the play calling question too, like one way to judge that is to use Peterson's motto for what the goal of the offense is, which is to be efficient and explosive. And they were kind of, they weren't terrible at both of those last year, but they were kind of like mediocre and especially not good in the run game. And so if they're able to pick up the efficiency in the run game and being better, having better short yardage blocking will help that. And then if they're able to be more explosive in both the run game and the pass game, and hopefully the spacing of Gabe Davis and Brian Thomas Jr. will help that, then I expect it to certainly be better than last year. But I think the way you, yeah, phrased it, will be good enough is good too.
And I mean, some of the best stretches we've seen of the passing game and Doug Peterson era is Trevor Lawrence working off play action. And regardless of anything that's out there, like it's just true. Like the quality of your running game does help determine how impactful play action can be. So if they can run the ball better, they can throw the ball better. They'll get better looks. All right, Gus, I'm gonna close my eyes. Hit me with your last question. I want it to knock my socks off.
All right, I didn't want the kicker battle, but I'm going back to special teams. I'm really interested in the new kickoff rules. Another shout out to Rosenthal. I was listening to his first NFL daily pod that he did with Patrick Claiborne and Jordan Rodrigue. And Jordan was saying that at Rams practices, like it's been really cool to see like how the kickoff rules have changed the returns. And like, it almost seems like they're running like zone and counter plays. And there's like a bunch of different position types is obviously one of the big draws. And so, and then I was talking about like, the different types of kicks that kickers might have to do on kickoffs. And so I feel like there's just a ton of new things that are going to be tried out during training camp. And then I think joint practices will be really important to have, like, be able to test it out against another team kind of and have that be like your first look before the preseason and just really your first true look at it. And so I'm especially excited to watch special teams during those joint practices with Tampa Bay. But for the whole training camp, like I'll be paying a lot more attention to special teams and the kickoffs specifically than normal.
Yeah, I mean, just a few glimpses we saw of it and OTAs and stuff, I thought, you know, it was really interesting. Like, it's a completely different world now. And, like the aspect of it I'm interested in is like it's leading to like different body types needed, you know, on the roster. So I'm curious if teams are going to start carrying maybe less defensive linemen, maybe less, you know, potentially even one less offensive lineman, so right, they can get, you know, those kind of guys, you know, on the field because in the margins. Because we've seen the Jaguars, their draft get impacted by this rule. I mean, they spent a fifth round on a player seemingly because of this rule, you know, singularly. So I'm interested to see, like you said, you know, how it plays out. It's been cool to see. We saw teams, you know, use plays during its first, you know, rendition in the XFL, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So we saw teams use plays then that works. So I'm interested to see, you know, it seems like it gives special teams coordinators a lot more to do.
Yeah. I guess to make a specific question, I would say, can the Jags take advantage of the new kickoff rules or will they be taken advantage of? And I have confidence that the first option is going to happen because Heath Farlow seemed like a pretty sharp and good special teams coordinator in the 2 years that he's been here. And I feel like they've been sharp in like prioritizing returners, which they've been doing, I guess, since Urban, since Jamal Agnew signed. But maybe you can credit that to Trent Baalke a little bit too. But they really made sure they had returners already in the offseason between Devin Duvernay and Keelan Robinson, two new additions. And so I'm optimistic that like they'll be one of the better teams and actually like be able to get a competitive edge out of the new
rule
in its first year of being active. But that's still a question that I have.
I mean, we've seen before in the moments he's, you know, it's been opportune for him to do so. But Heath Farwell's a pretty creative guy. So I'm with you. I'm interested to see really how that's deployed. I mean, teams that don't invest in that position on their staff, you know, are probably going to be behind the eight ball quite a bit this offseason.
Yeah, it was cool hearing Heath talk earlier in the offseason about like what the research process has been kind of, and like how he's reached out to so many different coaches, including like the former Jags special teams coach, to just like try to find new ideas, which that's what he should be doing. And that's, I'm sure, what a lot of other coaches are doing, but it was still interesting to hear him actually talk about it.
100%. All right, Gus. Training camp, week from today. You got anything else you want to talk about before we head out there? The next time we'll be on here, we will be reporting live from the same rooms that we're in after watching the Jaguars hold a training camp practice.
Is it going to be live, though? Is it?
No.
No.
It's going to be recorded from the rooms that we're in after a Jaguars practice at the Urban Miller Electric Center.
Yeah, no, I don't think I have anything else. I'm excited. I'm excited for football to come back. I'm still kind of enjoying the summer and like the calm before the storm as much as I can. Yeah. But I definitely miss the sport, so it'll be fun to be out there.
Yeah, you're not going to see your family anymore after next week.
Nah, not really.
Yeah, the reality of it. All right, as always, thank you guys for listening to the Jaguars on SI podcast. You see the brand, the website brand
thing? Yeah, I actually meant to comment on that. It looks really good.
There we go. Yeah, there we go. We're moving on, bigger and better things, my friends. So thank you guys for listening to the Jaguars on SI podcast. Please, please subscribe to us on YouTube. When we get to 1,000, not only will we be able to monetize and continue to bring you guys content, but Gus will do something purely for my entertainment. We'll figure that out at a later date. Continue to subscribe. Like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter, find me at si.com/NFL Jaguars or Jaguars on SI. You can find my pal Gus at Big Cat Country, does fantastic work. Gus, you got anything you want the folks to know?
See you next week.
Yes, sir. Don't get lowballed, my friend.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.